You're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, here along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. If you have a question about your animal's behavior, give us a call right now. Our number is 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. In addition to the calls, we've got a special topic to share. Patricia?
Hey, Mueller. You've seen Finding Nemo, haven't you?
I have my daughter watching it probably 100 times or so.
Probably watching it as we speak. Well, then, if you've seen it that many times, you undoubtedly remember Deb. Deb was Nemo's tank buddy.
Yep.
Lived in the tank with Nemo, who introduced Nemo to her sister, Flo.
Flo, yes.
Except Flo was nothing but Deb's reflection in the glass of the tank.
I do remember that.
I'm sure you do. And, you know, even though Deb was not able to recognize her own reflection, we're going to talk about a new study that suggests that elephants are one of the few animals that can.
That they really can.
That's what it looks like.
Well, that's great. We'll find out more about that later on. And we'll also talk with a Florida researcher about a talented dolphin named Calvin who might have become the first dolphin to use vocalization for purposes other than communication. And what's more, he can sing the Batman theme. Batman. Well, anyway, we'll hear. That wasn't.
Oh, sing
that
more,
wasn't,
Larry.
That wasn't Calvin. That
Do
was me.
Do more. You're right.
We'll hear about him later in the show. But first, we have some callers on the air. And let's take our first call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Sue from South Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Sue, pleasure to speak with you. What can we do for you?
Well, we have a wonderful 2-year-old collie, and he's not allowed on the living room furniture. He never tries to go on it while we're around, but as soon as we leave the house, he jumps right up on it.
Of course.
Yet the kids and I have even driven around the block, and by the time we get back, he's on the chairs and the couch.
Of course.
But when we get in the house, he's lying in the hallway looking like he's done nothing wrong.
Well, he hasn't in his mind, because that's what he's learned, is he's learned that when you're there, he shouldn't be on the couch, and when you're not...
It's okay.
Why not? I mean, it makes perfect... You know, if you think about it from their perspective, mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense. They've learned a contingency, is that when my human's here, I shouldn't be on the couch, but when my human is gone... Nothing happens that tells me I shouldn't be on the couch. And gosh, it's really reinforcing up here on the couch. It's comfy. I get to look out the window. It's cozy. It's warm. So why shouldn't I be on the couch?
Oh, okay.
He probably doesn't even know that you don't want him on the couch when you're gone.
Well, the only reason that we think he's being a little sassy is he does the same thing in the middle of the night where we go to sleep. He sleeps right next to our bed. If one of us wakes up in the middle of the night, he's on the furniture, and then he sees us looking at him, and he gets right down, like he's in trouble.
Uh-oh. But,
yeah.
But again, you know, I go back to, I don't think this is sassy, although he may be sassy in other ways.
No, he's not. He's perfect. That's why we're like, how
well,
do we get him to stop?
And that's really important, because the sweet collie that you have is still being sweet, because really, if you think about it from his perspective, what he's learned is if you're aware and you're looking at him, he shouldn't be on the couch. But
uh-huh.
If you're not, there's no reason not to get up on the couch.
Well, we just want to know how to get him to stop that if we can rarely catch him.
Is it one couch or is it?
It's one couch, and he's a 70-pound dog, and he goes on the couch or on our 2 small recliners. He can barely fit on them, but it's his favorite spot.
But he likes it up there. I would do two things. One is I would look at the couch and think about what is it giving our dog. Some dogs love to sleep on the cold, hard floors because mm-hmm. they run a little hot. Some dogs love warm and cozy and soft and plush, and that's mm-hmm. what sounds like your dog. Get him a really cozy, soft, warm dog bed. Get him one particularly that has sides that go up, sort of like a donut shape.
Okay.
Dogs love those. They like to put their head up on something higher. They actually like a pillow. I am not being anthropomorphic.
Mm-hmm.
You can put just a mat there, and you can put a soft little doggy mat with sides on it, and dogs will pick the sides every time. That's partly why they like the couch, because they can rest their head against something, sort of prop it up a little bit.
He does. He puts his head on the armrest.
Exactly.
That
so get him
good.
A doggy bed that has sides on it, a soft, warm, cozy one. And then at the same time, I want you to discourage him from going up on the couch. And what you need to do is you need to put something up there that has nothing to do with your presence that acts to teach him not to go up there. You can do it simply. You can put cardboard boxes up there for a couple of weeks till he gets out of the habit. You can put a scat mat that gives him like a carpet shock. You can build a Rube Goldberg device that has pop cans fall on his head or something. I sort of hate for you to do that. But you get the idea, right?
I'd go with the boxes.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And here's the number for you to call, 1-800-462-7413. Time now for an email question, Patricia. And we heard from Jessie in La Crosse, Wisconsin. She says she loves the show, by the way, and she's learned so much from listening, but she needs your help with her cat.
Okay.
And here's what she writes. Every time I go to the bathroom, my cat starts to cry.
Oh,
yeah, dear. Not too bad when I'm brushing my teeth or doing my hair, but it's the worst when I take a shower. The whole time I'm in there, he'll walk around the bathroom and the apartment and howl.
No kidding.
Stick his head in the curtain, meowing, and sometimes just lay right in front of the lip of the stall until I'm done. I've tried flicking him with water while I'm in there, and he still howls. His litter box is in the bathroom. I'm not sure if that would have anything to do with it. This isn't a huge deal, but I live in an apartment complex, and I'm worried about the fact that at some point I may have an annoyed neighbor on my hands.
Get some knocking on the door. Keep it down.
What's going on in there? Any advice?
Well, that's, you poor thing. And I'm not sure what's going on without getting more information. Here's a guess, and it is, man, I'm going out of left field here, Larry. This is a wild guess.
Okay.
I know of probably a couple hundred cases over 18, 19 years of dogs and cats both who seem to be distressed when their owner gets in water, whether it's the shower or the pool or the ocean or the lake. The animal gets extremely distressed. They pace, they pant, they bark, they howl. And I don't know if that's what's going on. It's certainly possible. I also have clients whose cats get in the shower with them and love, you know, little tigers, love the water. But I doubt that that's this cat. Doesn't sound like the cat's in the shower with her, like, please let me in. So that's one possibility. If that's true, you could try counter conditioning. You could, first of all, try giving the cat extra little goody treats when you go into the bathroom so that the cat learns. When my owner walks into the bathroom, that's a predictive event. It means I'm about to get my favorite salmon snack or something like that. And then you work your way up to your cat getting extra good treats, food, nummies, anytime you go in the shower. And so that's, I think I'd try that first. It's the easiest solution. It's the best guess with the highest probability of being right. So give that a try. And if it doesn't work, well, you could just email us right back and we'll go from there.
And if she forgot the email address.
Oh, if she forgot the email address. I'm like looking at, like, she won't forget her cat, Larry. She won't, I promise. But the email address is easy to remember. It's pets@wpr.org.
And you can try that address as well if you have a question. And if you have a question you want to get answered by phone, here's the number again, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is David.
David, where are you from?
Towson, Maryland, just north of Baltimore.
Well, it's great to talk with you, David. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a pet that is doing something brand new. We have an 11, 12-year-old husky shepherd mix named Maya. Got her from the pound, so I'm not sure exactly how old she is. And recently my son moved in with his cat, who is also a really, you know, affectionate kind of a cat, and really they work really well together. It really surprised me. They get along great. But he's been here for several months with the cat. But recently, Maya has started doing something very unusual, which is every once in a while, meaning maybe once a day or so, she will go into a corner or into a closet and really try and burrow herself as far deep into it as possible.
Aww.
Never has done anything like this before. And the one thing that's very unsettling about it is if I try to, you know, ask her to get out, normally she's extremely responsive. If I say, move out of there, she just gets up and goes. When she's in the closet, if I actually even reach for her collar or something, she will actually nip at me and has done this each time she's been in there. If I leave her alone, she walks out eventually and is just perfectly normal. There doesn't seem to be anything that actually sets this off and makes her go do that, but it's just a really unusual and kind of upsetting sort of behavior.
Oh, yeah, I don't blame you for being upset. Poor everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds very distressing. And the first thing that comes to my mind relates to her age. You know, mm-hmm. she 11-year-old husky Malamute cross. That's a geriatric dog. That's getting to be an old dog. And there is something called cognitive dysfunction in dogs. It's not quite Alzheimer's, but it appears to replicate it in some ways. Usually the symptoms occur at night. Dogs will walk around aimlessly, pace, not recognize you. Stare at the wall and go to corners. And that's one of the reasons I thought of that. So one thing I would do is I would get a good health check from your veterinarian. You might want to talk to a veterinary specialist in behavior about cognitive dysfunction disorder. There is a medication that your vet might be comfortable, if you're comfortable, trying to see if that helps. So that's just one possibility. Other possibility relates to the cat, whether the dog is somehow being stressed by the presence of the cat. And I would have to know a lot more before I was felt confident that those things might relate. Mm-hmm. But that's another possibility. I guess what I would do right now, I'd talk to my veterinarian, and I would start looking for the triggers. Well, more, not the triggers, but more the first thing, the first change in her behavior that lets you know she's about to go into the closet. And then see if you can entrain a different behavior, an incompatible behavior. And this will depend on who she is and what she loves to do. If she's toy-oriented, send her to a toy, have her come to you, have her do tricks or something, high-five. Mm-hmm. Sit pretty, whatever, but entrain a different behavior if you can manage.
But the first step is go and see your veterinarian.
I would be, given the age and that she might be older, because you're not really sure, I think that's the first thing I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, David. Appreciate it. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up, chimps can do it, gorillas can do it, and even dolphins can do it, but can elephants recognize themselves in a mirror? We'll find out next. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and you're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Each week, Patricia and Larry give you great advice that helps you deal with your pet's behavior, but sometimes you want more. Do you want to go in depth into one of the pet topics you've heard on the show? Do you want more advice? More pet fun? Well, why not check out our website? It's callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's also time now for this week's topic. And Tricia, you have news to share about primping pachyderms. Isn't that right?
That's right. There's a study in the November issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that suggests that elephants can recognize themselves in the mirror.
How can you possibly tell if an elephant recognizes itself in the mirror?
Well, that is the question of the day, isn't it? Well, you start with three elephants named, and I love this, Happy, Maxine, and Patty. And you put a large mirror in their enclosure, and then you watch. And what happened is that all three elephants spent long periods of time in front of the mirror, moving their bodies around in ways they never had before, just as if they were examining how their bodies looked from a different perspective.
Maybe they were thinking, do these tusks make me look fat?
Right. Well, I sort of, you know, if elephants are thinking about being fat, they're probably thinking, look, I look fat. That's so good. No, who knows what's going on in the mind of an elephant? But their behavior, Larry, was fascinating. They moved around and looked at different areas of their body. There was one elephant who even opened up her mouth as if she was investigating the inside of her mouth.
They don't make Palladent for pachyderms, do they?
I don't know that she was concerned.
Is this really enough proof that they recognize themselves in the mirror, though? Maybe they thought they were seeing another elephant.
Well, that's the question, is what does it mean when elephants behave this way in front of a mirror? And it might not be proof enough, because in this particular study, there was only one elephant who passed what's called the mark test.
And what is the mark test?
A mark test is when a scientist puts a mark, thus the title, the mark test.
Why didn't I think of that?
On an animal's face to see if the animal will notice it when it looks at itself in the mirror. And in this case, what they did is they painted a big, huge white X on the elephant's forehead. and then look to see what the elephants did when they went to the mirror, and there was only one elephant who behaved in a way that suggests that she noticed it. She used her trunk to touch it, sort of move her trunk around while she was looking in the mirror. Now, the other two elephants also got a white X on their foreheads, and they spent a lot of time in front of the mirror posturing, but they didn't actually touch the mark with their trunk.
Well, here's a question for you. Why does it matter whether animals can recognize themselves in the mirror anyway?
Well, you are full of really good questions. I mean, that's a really good question. Why are there scientists spending our tax money? Yeah. You know, and there are. And I would argue that's a really good thing, because these are the studies that are being done that help us learn more about the internal mental lives of animals. You know, questions like, are animals self-aware? Are they conscious? These are really important questions, I would argue, for understanding not just the evolution of the human brain, but also for understanding philosophical conundrums like animal welfare and animal rights.
Well, I am conscious as well of the fact that we have callers who are waiting to visit with us.
And your awareness is
very high.
Just very high.
Very, very high.
Very aware man, Larry.
And we do have some callers. And you can join us, too, at 1-800-462-7413. And let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, I'm Lauren from Tallahassee.
Delighted to hear from you. And what can we do for you?
Well, my parents have a 2.5-year-old female West Highland Terrier named Jenny. And she's a sweet little dog, but she's grown up in a family with different ideas of dog training.
Oh, that would never happen.
Oh, no. Right. One has rules and the other doesn't like them.
Okay.
But what's happening is that she doesn't necessarily come when called, and that strictly depends on what's more convenient for her or interesting at the time.
Okay.
They have a fenced-in backyard with a doggy door, and she gets a lot of exercise, but my dad's retired and is becoming forgetful, and he often lets her out. And so she takes off across the busy street, and they're just terrified.
Ooh.
And this happens a lot now. And I have tried all the tricks I know, because I used to have a Labrador, but this seems to be a very different creature, and I don't know what to do with her.
It is a different creature. First of all, it's a terrier.
Yeah.
And they were bred to work independently. And you know that dog breeds sort into many categories, but one of the ways to look at it is, how were they bred to work in terms of their humans? Were they bred to work as a team mm-hmm. with humans like Labradors and Border Collies? Or were they bred to work independently with a human sort of following along, like
right.
Whippets and Greyhounds and Terriers?
Mm-hmm.
And so you
Scottish,
have,
right?
Obviously, you have the latter. You have the latter category, and so you need to work around that. There are a couple things I do. Is one, given that she already has this history and reinforcement background of running outside what sounds like the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And getting reinforced for it, because she has a great time, right?
Yeah,
this is so much fun. And it sounds like your father's getting older, and you mentioned something about being forgetful. Part of this might be a systems problem. So one of the things you might want to think about is there something we can do logistically in our house, maybe a double door or something on the doorknob, so when your father feels it, he's reminded, oh, right, I mustn't let the dog out. So that's one, so the human behavior, you might want to work on that aspect of it too. I would also work on teaching her not to go out the front door. And so what I would do is I would start a training paradigm where you teach her that when the front door opens, if she turns and runs the other way, something wonderful will happen. And it needs to be more wonderful than running free around the yard. So we're talking, the Christmas turkey here. You know, we're talking great stuff.
That's great.
So what you do is you put her on a long line, because safety first. And what you're going to do is you're going to go to the front door. Somebody else is going to have a hold of the long line, or it's tied to a piece of furniture or something, so you're sure it's safe. You're going to just open the door just a couple inches. And then you're going to throw the food behind her.
Okay.
And make sure she sees it. So so rather than focusing on the door, she tracks the food, turns around, gets the food. You say, good girl. So do that 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next session, you're going to open the door a little bit more. And basically, you're going to keep doing that until what she learns is that every time the door opens, if I turn around and look behind me, there'll be something worth not
right.
running out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
So
great
that's
idea.
That's number two. And then the third is obviously teaching her to come when called. That's frankly, at this stage of the game, going to be the hardest one. What I would do if she gets outside is not chase her. I want you to get some great piece of food, get close to her, stop and stand sideways, wave the food in the air so the scent wafts to her, say, and then say, stay, good girl, and then move away from her and try to get her to come to you rather than you moving towards her, okay?
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I can't thank you enough for all those ideas.
Oh, good luck. Let us know how it goes, okay?
I will, and your show's wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you very much for calling, Lauren. Appreciate it so much. And all three of those things could be used in combination.
I would do the whole package.
The whole ball of wax.
The whole package.
Speaking of packages, we got a little pet tip package in the email.
What a gift.
Yeah.
Well, open it up, Larry. What's in the box?
Well, remember not long ago we spoke with Herschel in Oklahoma City about how to keep deer out of the pansies in his church's garden?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we heard from some listeners who had their own suggestions for Herschel. And Lois in Arcata, California has a thought to share, and she says the following. Most deer repellents have worked for me, but as long as you're thinking about new landscaping ideas, why not plant some rosemary and some high bushes? Oleander bushes, for example, can be made into trees or left as bushes, and they come in pink or white flowers. And not only are they beautiful to look at, but they're very low maintenance and deer hate them. They've never touched my rosemary, and they've never even looked at my oleander.
That's very interesting. You know, the reason they don't touch the oleander is because it's poisonous. It's extremely poisonous. As a matter of fact, it can kill little children and dogs. So that's used all over the West. California, the highway department has planted oleander everywhere. It also grows in very warm areas, but not so much. For Wisconsin, for example, we couldn't be planting oleander.
No.
But I love the idea of natural plantings. And rosemary, what a wonderful thing for us. Mm-hmm. I love hearing that deer don't like that. That's a great idea.
Very good suggestion. And if people want to send us a pet tip, how do they do that?
Please do. We'd love to hear from you. We get great ideas from our listeners. They send us their tips to pets@wpr.org.
And if they want to call us, they call 1-800-462-7413, and you can do that too, just like our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Carrie from Racine, Wisconsin.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My husband and I have two cats, and we're very concerned about one in particular, Macy. She has a really odd behavior.
What does she do?
She licks armpits.
Oh. You can say
there are many a
you
time.
Can confess on our show.
There are many times where we wake up in the morning with her kind of nose down under our armpit going to town. And we kind of assume that it has to do with the deodorant, because you know how you sleep at night and sometimes deodorant residue is on the blanket? She will like go back to that spot and lick it. So I don't think it's just armpits.
Good observation. Yeah, it sounds like it's probably started at least with a substance that you put on your armpits, and then it might have generalized to just armpits. Now, have you tried using a different deodorant or going without for a while?
It really doesn't matter if it's Old Spice or Secret. She doesn't seem to make any difference whatsoever.
Have you tried going without it?
No. Oh, no. That would just be torture on everybody else. No, we haven't tried that. But we've just made sure that we keep our arms down at night, essentially.
Tie your arm to your body.
And the blanket up to our neck.
It'd be hard to sleep with your arm under your head, wouldn't it? Well, here's an idea for you. Is there are other scents and tastes that cats don't like. Citrus is probably the most famous and the least likely to bother you.
Okay.
So one thing you could try, get some citronella, get some orange or the oil of orange, go to some wonderful place where you can get oils that are appropriate to put on human skin.
Okay.
And after you put on your deodorant, add on another layer of some kind of citrus smelling thing. Now, it might be that that works, and it might be that your cat was like, oh, this is even better. I just love that.
I've never heard of this particular behavior from anybody else who's had cats.
I suspect you are our first armpit-licking cat call that we have had on Calling All Pets.
You're the very first.
If memory serves. But I have to tell you, the first cat that I ever had loved to lick arms, and he loved the area sort of the bend of your, on the inside of your elbow, and he loved the crease right where your armpit starts. And I think that was...
And you never let him get further, so you don't know for sure that he wouldn't have.
So I did not open my arm up to him, so to speak.
But it is a very odd feeling, by the way.
That scratchy little tongue, I would imagine. You know, if you just let him do it, maybe you wouldn't need...
would be a shower.
Take a shower. But I would, if the citrus or whatever smell you use that you like and he doesn't work, what you could try is that when he starts to do it, you literally just don't say a word, but just leap up out of bed. That's not very restful for you, but it's a consequence that will basically teach him, like, oh, this is sort of not fun, because they leap out of bed as if they've been shocked.
Okay.
And that's not very comforting to me either. So you could try that, but try the first one. It sounds like much more fun.
Okay, yeah, we'll give that a try.
All right.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And here's the number for you to call, 1-800-462-7413. Coming up next, we'll talk with a guest about Calvin, the talented dolphin who proves that you don't have to be human to be a mammal that knows how to sing. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Even man's best friend has a fault or two, so bring out the best in your pet with great advice from Tricia's dog training books. If you need help with a multi-dog household, or if you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, Tricia has a book that can help. Call the radio store at 800-747-7444. That's 800-747-7444, or visit our website at callingallpets.org.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And this week, we welcome Heidi Harley to the program. Heidi's an associate professor of psychology at New College of Florida, and she's the lead author of a study suggesting that dolphins can recognize rhythms and imitate them vocally. And she's here today to talk more about her study. And Heidi, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today. First, tell us a little bit more about the study, and why is this discovery so important?
Well, we've been studying how dolphins perceive and produce rhythms at the seas at Epcot Center at Disney. And the reason we started on this adventure was because we were looking at communication systems across the animal kingdom, including humans. Humans have this very unique communication system, language, and we define it as being only a human way of communicating. It's by definition human. So we thought that there are clearly aspects of human language that you can see in other species. And so we decided to look for one of those, which is rhythm processing. So for humans, it's very important. Babies use rhythm to learn language. Mothers and infants communicate rhythmically. If you just watch them interact, you'll see that the baby makes a sound and the mother makes a sound and the baby makes a sound. Cognitively impaired adults' language processing abilities can be predicted by their ability to process rhythms. So it's very important for humans, and we thought it's very likely in much of the animal kingdom. If you just think about frogs ribbiting outside of your window,
right,
or bird song, birds do it, bees do it, emperor penguins do it, they recognize each other by rhythms. But no one had looked to see if another species could produce arbitrary rhythms, by which I mean to say rhythms that we created ourselves and then trained them to do. So we know that they can use rhythms that are part of their normal repertoire, but we didn't know if another species could produce a rhythm that we asked them to produce.
So it sounds like you were asking these animals to produce notes, vocalizations in a kind of a rhythmic form. How do you go about training your dolphins to make these arbitrary vocalizations in the first place?
And that's a good question. And at first, we were completely daunted because I went to the trainer, Leslie Larson Plott, who fortunately is very flexible and adventurous and loves to train. And I said, well, Leslie, we want you to train this thing. No one's ever done it. We don't know if it's possible. It might be a complete failure. And we don't really know how to start. And so what we did to begin with was we played the dolphin rhythms that he could hear well. So they were 14 kilohertz sounds because dolphins can hear a lot higher than we can. Humans stop hearing at about 20 kilohertz. And if you wear, you know, headphones a lot or listen to iPods and run or go to rock concerts, you probably hear a little less well than that.
The higher ones drop out fast, right?
That's right. And the dolphins can hear up beyond 120 kilohertz.
Oh, wow.
So we started at 14 kilohertz. So we would play the sounds, but we also had Leslie producing the rhythms with her hands because she's used to using hand signals with dolphins. If you've ever been to any kind of oceanarium, you've seen the trainers use hand signals. So she also did that. And we created a little pneumatic switch for the dolphin. And it really what it looked like was a little plastic dog ball hooked up to some air. And when the air would reach the computer would turn on. So if the dolphin depressed this ball, then the tone would come on. And if he lifted up his rostrum, the bottlenose of the bottlenose dolphin, then it would stop. And so and that's how we got them originally to work. And usually when you do research with animals, it can take, you know, months and years to get what you're trying to get. And Calvin, who's actually a remarkably bright dolphin, I will say, got the first three rhythms in about 3 months.
And is it true that you taught Calvin the Batman theme?
Well, that's a little bit of an exaggeration that I'm not sure if it comes out of blogging or where the phenomenon comes from. But what we did teach Calvin was a rhythm that went short and then long. So the rhythms are mostly made up of either short tones or long tones. And the Batman rhythm is short long, so it's kind of like Batman. But it doesn't really sound like the Batman theme, but he does it. We show him objects to tell him which rhythm to do. And so for Batman, of course, we have this little Batman doll that the trainer actually picked. She has a very good sense of humor.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I love it.
And let's listen to one of those vocalizations. Can we do that? Let's try and listen. Brad, our engineer.
I want to hear it.
Brad, our engineer, has got one up. Let's listen.
And so that was the Batman rhythm that you
just
heard. So you heard that little
short sound. Fast and long and slow.
That's exactly right. And so what we wanted to be able to do was recognize these rhythms by ear. So what happens is I'm doing this with Leslie, the trainer, but also with Wendy Fellner, who is a research associate at the Living Seas with me at Disney. And so what she does is when the dolphin produces the rhythm, Wendy has her eyes shut, and she doesn't know which object has been presented to the dolphin. And so then she recognizes by ear what the rhythms are, which is a little bit stressful for the person.
Yeah,
but they get good at
but
it.
But that's a good design because, as we all know, if she did know, it would be easy for her to unconsciously even sway the result. So good for you for making it a good, clean study like that.
Now, let's try it again.
I would love to hear that.
Okay, and what you want to listen for is the short tone, and that's very easy to hear because it's broader band, which means it's represented across more frequencies, so it's going to be easy for you to hear. And then there's going to be a long whistle, and a lot of times it takes a little bit of practice to hear higher frequency sounds that animals produce. So listen, you'll hear the short tone, and then listen hard, so you'll be able to hear that long, clear whistle at the end.
Well, let's listen again.
That's great.
That's great.
It sounds from what we've read of your study that you eventually trained Calvin and another dolphin named Bob, I think, to create five other rhythms when presented with five different objects, right?
What happened was we trained Bob to begin with. Since we didn't know much about rhythms and animals, we trained Bob to listen to rhythms and discriminate among them. And so with Bob, we wanted to find out if he could discriminate among a whole group of rhythms. So he discriminated among six different rhythms. And to make sure that it was the rhythm and not the very specific sounds we were playing, we would change the tempo or change the frequency, and still he could recognize those rhythms.
That's fascinating. And is that part of why you suspect that the dolphins actually are able to to recognize what we call a sense of rhythm? You know, I mean, I guess the question comes up, do they really understand rhythm in a way comparable to ours, or are they just mimicking?
Well, that's a good question, and it's hard to know exactly how they're processing it, but it seems that they have the flexibility that we do, because Calvin is naturally, we will reinforce him as long as he produces the rhythm. We will reinforce him for it. So he could produce it exactly the way that we produce it, or he could change it. And in fact, he has changed in all kinds of ways. For example, if he does the short rhythms with whatever vocalization he wants to, we count it. So it used to be more whistle-like, and then it became more broadband to represent more frequencies, the short ones. And the long ones used to be flatter, and now the whistles have become more of an upsweep. That is, that they start at a lower frequency and go up.
You know, I'm a big basketball fan, and one of the objects that you used was a basketball, which got my attention right away. What was the rhythm connected with that? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the rhythm with the basketball, of course, we like basketballs, too, because they float, which is good when you work in the water, and the dolphins can manipulate them. And the rhythm we have with that, we call a dribble, and if you listen to it, you'll be able to tell while. It's just a bunch of short tones that go on and on until we ask him to stop.
Well, let's listen to that once. Sounds like he's dribbling right up the court.
No, 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 no.
That's exactly right. I did want to say that although I think Calvin is especially talented, I do think that we got it so quickly because dolphins must use rhythms in their natural communication system. But we haven't found that exactly how they do that yet. If you look at their whistles, each dolphin has a unique whistle that's just for that dolphin. So say Flipper had a unique signature whistle, we call them. And let's say for Flipper, and I have no idea if this is true, it would go down, up, down. And so if it were Flipper's whistle, it would always go down, up, down, but it might be longer or louder. And so each dolphin would have a different contour like that. So some might have a flatter whistle, or some might have a whistle that goes from the top to the bottom, mm-hmm. You know, high, low. And they produce those usually in what we call loops. So they would have that contour typically multiple times, say, like one dolphin would often have it twice and when they usually produce their whistle, or one might have it three times. And that might be where you would find rhythm in dolphins, but I think it must be naturally occurring in them for Calvin to have done so well so quickly.
Yeah. And you know, your original study, I think, was published about a year ago and made a lot of progress since then.
Well, actually, it's not quite published yet. I gave a talk on it at the Acoustical Society, which is how this press all began and how the Batman theme became so
famous. It's amazing what the press picks up on, isn't it?
It is. So we've been waiting for him to have the 9 rhythms before we publish it, and we are now just at that point.
I look forward to reading it.
And I'm looking forward to traveling to Orlando, and I'll be at Epcot in a few weeks.
I'm so jealous.
I'm looking forward to meeting Calvin, and we can all see him if we travel to Disney.
That's exactly right. Disney is unique in that they'll let us actually do research in front of the public. And so what happens is if you go into the seas, about 3 times a day, we do a dolphin session that the public can see there in that 5-million-gallon tank. So you're standing in a little room, so you get to breathe air and watch Calvin, who's underwater. And we actually do the trials that we actually do for the research are typically in front of the public, and the public gets excited. And, you know, when he gets it right, they're all happy. And when the dolphin gets it wrong, they all sigh. And
What times of the day do you do that, by the way?
Usually about 10:45, 2:15, and 4:15.
I'll be there at one of those times.
I'm so jealous. say hi to Calvin for me.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Heidi Harley is an associate professor of psychology at New College of Florida, and she joined us today from ARP Studios in Charleston, South Carolina. Don't go away. Our animal trivia question of the week is next, with your chance to win a copy of our own Patricia McConnell's book. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Do you have a question for Patricia? I know. Just call the 1-800 number, right? But you're shy, and the idea of talking on the radio gives you hives. So how do you get your question on Calling All Pets? We have a solution. It's called email. Send your pet behavior questions to pets@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you.
This is Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And before we go back to the phones, it's time for our animal trivia question of the week. And if you think you know the answer to this week's question, give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. All correct guessers will have their names pulled together, and two winners will be selected at random to win an autographed copy of Tricia's book, For the Love of a Dog, Understanding Emotion in You and Your Best Friend. And here's this week's question. Dolphins use clicks, whistles, and other vocalizations to communicate with other dolphins, and they also use these vocalizations to locate and hunt prey in dark water. They do it by analyzing underwater echoes with the help of a special organ called the melon. What is the special ability to analyze echoes called? If you think you know the answer, call us at 1-800-462-7413. And to find out the answer to this week's question, visit our website in about a week, and we'll have the answer posted at callingallpets.org. But now we are ready to make some more calls, or take some more calls, I should say. And here's the number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hello, you're on Calling All Pets.
This is Laurie from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
And Laurie, I bet you have a question for us.
Well, I have a problem with my most favorite and most beloved cat. I have three cats, and she has become so mean to the other two. They've always lived together. This is a new phenomenon. And when they approach her, it's like walking a gauntlet. She hisses and bats her paws at them, and they're afraid to go anywhere.
Ooh, and this is a change, you say?
This is relatively new, yes.
Was she friendly with them before? Did she ignore them before? Tell me how big of a change.
One of them was her baby back in 1998, and she's always been very protective of him, but she's not anymore. And the other one we also got as a kitten in 1998. She's never been mean to them before.
Okay. It's interesting to see how big of a change this really is. The first thing that comes to mind, even though my training is in behavior, you know, so often problematic behavior stems from some kind of a physical event. And if it was my cat, I'll tell you the first thing I would do is I would call my veterinarian and make an appointment.
Okay.
And look for one of the challenges for veterinarians is to find a source of pain. You know, you can do blood tests, you can do a full chem panel, you can do all these different
lots
procedures, but you know, you can x-ray an animal and not know if they're in pain or not necessarily, if it's soft tissue related. So that's one of the challenges. Try and first look to see, could this be related to pain? Because it's one of the most common reasons why animals who are normally friendly become aggressive to others approaching. Stay away from me, I hurt.
Okay.
You could also think about feel away, which is that pheromone, that sort of a feel-good pheromone.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, I don't want to say smell, because it actually doesn't have a scent that you can perceive, but it has an effect on the very primitive areas of your cat's brain, and it can act to calm and to soothe, especially in social tension. So that might be helpful. And beyond that, I would want to know more about what triggers this. So if neither of those are helpful, then what you might want to do is get a notebook, sit down and be Jane Goodall, and just start noticing exactly how has her behavior changed in all ways, not just around the other cats. See if there's any kind of a pattern. Does it happen at night and not in the morning? And see if you can get at what's going on that way by trying to find a pattern.
Give all those things a try, and thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And here's the number for you to call, 1-800-462-7413. And let's take another call. Hello, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, my name's Melissa, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Melissa, thank you so much for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have two puppies that are about 10 months old. And when we were visiting my parents a few months ago, they discovered that they can jump the fence.
Uh-oh.
It's not a problem when we're at home because I've got a tall wooden fence that they can't get over, but my parents have a standard chain link, you know, fence, and they can go over it lickety-split.
Uh-oh.
And we're getting ready to go visit my parents in a few days. We'll be there for almost a week, and I'm just wondering, is there anything that I could maybe do to help train them to not go over the fence, or things to do to maybe help prevent them from going over the fence?
Do they, let me ask you one question before I answer. How are they housed when your parents, are they inside the house most of the time? Do they have to stay in the yard alone, or what's the deal?
They're inside the house most of the time, but they do like to run around. My parents have a yard that's significantly larger than ours at home, and
okay.
There's a lot more to explore. There's a pond, and, you know, so they tend to want to be outside a little more often, but
sure.
They are inside dogs.
And so when they're visiting, do they, when you open the door, do they dash across this big yard and leap the fence in one single bound like Superman before you can react? Or does it happen after they've been sniffing around for 20 minutes?
It depends on what's in the neighbor's yard. If the neighbor's cat
right.
happens to be out, or there's my parents have deer that run through their neighborhood. If there's a deer in the yard or a squirrel in the yard, they may take off chasing the squirrel or the deer. And when it leaves the yard, they leave the yard after it.
Gotcha. So. Gotcha. Well, given that you're only going to be there a week, I think the answer should be based on the amount of time you're going to want to spend working on this, because I could give you all kinds of ideas if this was your yard. But given that you're just visiting,
okay.
I frankly, this is a very unsophisticated answer, but I would take the simplest way out. I would go outside in the yard with my pockets stuffed full of the best treats imaginable. And every time my dogs turn and look at me, I would walk outside, let them put their noses down, and then I would call their name. And if they turn and look at me, I would give them a great treat.
Okay.
I would teach them, in other words, that when they're in the yard, if they look at you when you say their name, they will get a treat. And it's the easiest training in the world. You got great treats. You go outside. You say their name. If they don't turn and look at you because they found a great scent, then you take that wonderful piece of food, you put it right with an inch of their nose, and then lure their head back towards you. Let them look at you and then give them the treat and then go from there. And
okay.
So, one, you're going to train them to pay attention to you. But this is... The only reason this is going to be helpful is because I'm going to suggest that you don't leave the dogs out unattended. You go outside with the dogs. If there are lots of rabbits, lots of deer, I would put them on a long line.
Okay.
So that you grab the end of the line. Or I would, honestly, for just a week, I would take them out on long leashes and just let them wander around. There's so many things you could do, but teaching a dog to stop once he's engaged in a chase it's graduate school. You know, it takes you a while to get there. You can get there with some dogs, not all. You can get there with some dogs, but it takes a lot of time. And for a week, life's too short.
Life's too short.
I would manage this rather than try and fix it.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, Patricia. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I'm Steve. I'm calling from the Washington, D.C. area, where we just began hearing your program, and it's great.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling, Steve. And I bet you have a question.
I do. I have a 3-year-old Lao Chun, a wonderful dog named Cosmo, who is a cyclical barker. And the question is, how can we help him stop barking in basically what are now uninterruptible cycles that probably drive him as nuts as everybody else?
This is really interesting. Tell me more about the cyclical barking. Does he bark almost as if in a trance repeatedly and then stop for a while and then start it again? Or tell me more about this, the pattern of the barking.
Well, it usually starts when there's more than one person in the room. And I've attributed in some ways to the fact that the breed, when we got him, we were told that the Lao Chun is typically always looking to establish their rank as number two in the pack, even more so than a lot of other dogs.
And status conscious
right,
breed, yeah.
You know, I think, as you said to the earlier caller, that, you know, that animals have kind of a social behavior that's contagious, and I think once they get going, It's their own behavior.
There are certain behaviors that's right. That's a good point. There are certain behaviors that are contagious unto themselves. They become almost circular, and they're called self-reinforcing. So the more the more he barks, the more he wants it to bark.
He's a self-reinforcing barker.
yeah, and it well could be that this is about his place in the hierarchy, or just competition. I mean, basically, this could be resource competition, as in attention is a resource, and I want more of it.
True.
So I'm going to work my way up. What I would suggest doing is to actively teach him an incompatible behavior. So you said sometimes he's quiet. So one of the things I would start doing is I would have in the freezer, I would have some toys that have little hollows in them.
Mm-hmm.
Put some tasty, healthy little treats in there. Something, the freezer helps because it takes him a long time to lick it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put a soft food in there.
To give him something to do.
And so what you're going to do is, say you have company coming, and this is one of the times where he's not barking. Rather than waiting to see if he's going to bark, when he's quiet, maybe 10 minutes into the interaction with your guest, you're going to give him this stuffed toy. Now, this is not going to work if he's a resource guard as such that he'll bite your guests if they get up and walk
really
by.
No, he doesn't really bite anybody.
Good. So I didn't mean to imply that he would, but I didn't want to set up a problem.
No, they're wonderful outside. They're even quiet. In the house, if they hear you just like, you know, hit a key on your computer, they'll be up and barking. It's you got to get used to these characters.
They are known for being articulate.
Yeah, something like that.
So I would
sensitive.
Try the incompatible behavior perspective and see how that goes, and then give us a call.
I really appreciate it.
Take two aspirin calls in the morning.
Thanks a million.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks a million for calling. And Patricia, thank you so much. Always fun.
Oh, it is always fun. My pleasure, Larry.
Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and an adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Calling All Pets is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0106P and bring out the best in your pet with great advice from Tricia's dog training books. Whether you need help with training a new puppy or if you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, Tricia has a book that can help. Call the radio store at 800-747-7444 or visit our website at callingallpets.org.